I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm, Jumping Swing, Classic Blues, and Hot Jazz, Old and New. I'm chatting with Mark Borowski. Mark has spent an awful lot of time really focusing and dedicating his attention to the work of stride piano master James P. Johnson. There's a lot of other aspects of Johnson. We're talking pretty much about him as a pianist and somewhat as a popular music composer, but there's many other dimensions to this man.
What you're hinting at is that in the 1930s, during the Depression, when Johnson was in semi-retirement, he started working on extended classical forms in addition to jazz, of which he was an acknowledged master. As early as 1927, he had done his Rhapsody Yamacraw, and this was arranged by the prominent African-American classical composer William Grant Still. In the 1930s, he began work on his Harlem Symphony. And in 1938-39, he collaborated with the poet laureate of the Harlem Renaissance, Langston Hughes, on a one-act opera called De Organizer. The one tune that has survived from this work is The Hungry Blues, which Johnson recorded for a session organized by the impresario John Hammond in 1939. Hungry Blues, again, was from Johnson's one-act opera with Langston Hughes, De Organizer, and it featured the wonderful trumpet of Henry Red Allen with an unidentified vocalist. It's thought that this vocalist may have been Ruby Smith, who was a niece of Bessie Smith.
Oh, wow.
But there's no conclusive evidence. She did record other selections with Johnson's band on other occasions for John Hammond around this time.
This is Jazz Rhythm. You're listening to a focus on and tribute to James P. Johnson, particularly as his music was recorded and performed in the 1930s. It seemed like toward the late 30s, there was some public recognition of Johnson by the other jazz people who brought him forward to the public.
Yes. For the most part during his career, Johnson was a musician's musician, extremely well-respected and well-known to other musicians, less well-known to the public at large. But again, the demonstration by Panassier that when he needed a stalwart on the piano for his history-making recording sessions, he chose Johnson. And of course, John Hammond chose Johnson to be his featured pianist with the Count Basie Band at the Spirituals to Swing concerts. And this goes on.
Johnson's life in the 30s, he stayed in New York and he had a home there?
Yes, he lived in Jamaica, Long Island. He essentially had a comfortable middle-class existence. For a black man in the 1930s in the Depression America, he had made it.
Songwriters were often basically cheated out of their royalties in those days. Did he manage to maintain rights on some of the songs and get some income from that, do you know?
Yes. As far as I know, he retained the rights to all of his major compositions, such as If I Could Be With You 1 Hour Tonight and Old Fashioned Love. And it was the royalties from those compositions that allowed him to have this comfortable existence in semi-retirement working on his extended compositions.
Often overlooked is one of the signature tunes of the jazz era, Charleston, came from Johnson.
Most people know the tune, but few people associate Johnson as the composer of the Charleston. It's somewhat ironic, but again, it's consistent with his persona as the musical embodiment of Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man.
Nicely put.
A medley with the Count Basie Orchestra from the Spirituals to Swing concerts, Old Fashioned Love and A Carolina Shout, one of the many recordings that he made of this signature tune of Harlem Stride Piano.
From the Spirituals to Swing.
Yes.
Was that recorded at Carnegie?
Yes. This was recorded at the Spirituals to Swing concerts, which had been organized by Johnson's friend John Hammond.
Thank you. Live performances of Blueberry Rhyme and Carolina Shout by James P. Johnson at Carnegie Hall in December 1938, part of the historic Spirituals to Swing concerts. My guest for this celebration of James P. Johnson is Mark Borowski of the James P. Johnson Foundation. Why don't you give us a brief overview of what's going on with the James P. Johnson Foundation?
The foundation was set up by Johnson's grandson, Barry Glover, in order to preserve Johnson's papers and recordings, as well as to better publicize his work to the general public, and to use the revenues from his royalties and his compositions in order to fund arts programs for underprivileged children in the Riverside area.
How can people contact the foundation if they have questions or some reason to want to get in contact with them?
There is a website, www.jamespjohnson.org.
www.jamespjohnson, as one word,
.org.
O-R-G.
This is my claim to fame, if you will, as a jazz scholar. This is not listed in any of the standard jazz discographies. And upon hearing this, I realized that this was previously unissued and previously uncatalogued, and was clearly an example of Johnson's style. It is similar enough to the issued take of If Dreams Come True that it's clearly Johnson. The feeling of unadulterated joy that I experienced upon first hearing this will remain with me for the rest of my life.
A rare alternate take of If Dreams Come True. Mark, it's been great having you here for the first of these two programs. You've clearly thought about Johnson's significance and place in the 1930s.
Again, this was a transitional decade for Johnson. Certainly playing his best at the beginning of the decade, coming out of semi-retirement at the end of the decade, when he recorded some of his best solos and bandsides, and just before he would suffer the first of several strokes, which would slowly diminish his technique. So we are getting Johnson at his very best. Thank you.
Borowski, thanks for being my guest on this first of two programs. We'll be having you back to talk more about James P. Johnson in the 1920s and the 1940s.
Thanks, Dave. I can hardly wait.
And I can hardly wait to hear more. You can explore this remarkable musician further at the website of the James P. Johnson Foundation, www.jamespjohnson.org. That's James P. Johnson as one word, no breaks, .org. Jazz Rhythm is produced by Rhythm Productions, specializing in professional transfer and restoration of rare tapes and discs. We'll close with yet another demonstration of Johnson's remarkable virtuosity. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for listening.
Boogie Woogie had become a national craze in the late 1930s with the reemergence of pioneers such as Albert Ammons, Meade Lux Lewis, and Pete Johnson, all of whom were featured along with James P. by John Hammond at his Spirituals to Swing concerts. A-flat Dream is Johnson's take on Boogie Woogie. Hammond probably requested this type of number as Johnson's answer to the Boogie Boys, saying essentially, I can do what you do, but my lighter touch is more interesting and more harmonically sophisticated, and even better, with no loss of swing. After demonstrating this transcendental, ethereal approach to Boogie Woogie, Johnson breaks into three unadulterated, improvised, seemingly effortless stride choruses in the last theme, laying down the gauntlet to his primitive competitors as if to say, "This is how it's done, boys."